Welcome back to the Good Health Podcast. I'm your host, Nicole Good, certified functional medicine practitioner and registered nutritional therapist. And this month, we've been talking about the gut and the immune system and the connection between the two. And today I'm joined by a brilliant guest. We've got Ellie Breacher, who is a registered nutritionist. She is on a mission to help people optimize their nutrition and transform their health in the mind, body, and gut. Her unique signature system, the Mind-Body-Gut Method, combines science-backed principles and personalized nutrition advice with lifestyle strategies, mindset practices, and the ongoing accountability that you'll need to thrive on your health journey. With her undeniable passion for food and wellness, Ellie has firmly cemented herself as one of the industry's leading recipe developers, working with high-profile brands on the supermarket shelves and delivering corporate nutrition talks. Ellie is also the host of the Gut 360 podcast, which aims to empower you to build a healthier gut and a happier life using a 360-degree approach to well-being. On today's episode, we're going to be talking about the gut and the immune connection. We've got some practical tips for you. We're going to be myth-busting and jumping into lots of great conversation with Ellie. So with that, let's jump straight into today's episode. Okay, great. So Ellie, you are the host of the Gut 360 podcast, but what made you realize that the gut was kind of one of these things that really runs through everything? What was it that, was there lots of health conversations that you were having, or was there a moment where it really clicked for you that gut health was kind of a focus that you really wanted to bring into your work?
I would say there's two things really. And the first is my own health journey. So I have Crohn's. I've had Crohn's since I was 8 years old. And so I grew up understanding that gut health is key to everything. It's so important for our immune system, our mental health, our sleep, our hormones, our energy, our metabolism. Basically, every system in the body is affected by the gut. And I understood that growing up with my own health experience. And then as a nutritionist in clinic, the second thing that really helped this to click for me is seeing how often people came into my clinic for one issue, you know, maybe bloating or fatigue or skin flare-ups, hormones, low mood, and it very quickly becomes clear that the gut is underneath so much of it. So I'd say the more clients I worked with, the more obvious it became that the gut is rarely just about digestion. It's about how people absorb their nutrients, regulate inflammation, respond to stress, produce neurotransmitters, you know, all these different parts of our body. So the gut health became such a central part of my work through my clinic and through my own journey together.
Yeah. And something you mentioned there, this is something I see a lot in clinic. You know, you sort of said, as well as digestion, but sometimes it can be in lieu of digestion. It's not always that digestion is a problem. But, you know, you sort of mentioned like fatigue and hormones and some of the other symptoms that can come up around when gut health needs to be looked at. So how do you position this? Because this is a conversation I find I have to have quite a lot in clinic, is when somebody comes in and they sort of say, well, I don't really have gut symptoms, because quite a lot of people don't have, you know, I'm talking the classic, you know, when you say gut symptoms, they think of the classic constipations, diarrhea, these sorts of things that people automatically would say, I need to sort my gut out. How do you kind of frame that with somebody if they're coming in and sort of saying, well, you know, I'm tired all day and then wired at night, and, you know, we want to look at gut? How do you tell them about that and explain that link to them?
Yeah, so I'll usually explain that you don't need to have obvious digestive symptoms for the gut to be relevant. You know, you can have regular bowel movements and still have an underlying gut imbalance or gut issue that's affecting how you feel. So if someone feels tired but wired, that's when I immediately think about things like blood sugar balance, maybe, you know, stress, hormones, sleep quality, nutrient absorption, inflammation, and all of these are linked to our gut. You know, the gut really sits in the middle of all of those. So the gut and the nervous system are also constantly communicating. So if one is dysregulated, often the other is too.
That connection, I think, between the gut and all the different parts of the body, I just find it fascinating. It's such an interesting topic. I wanted to dig in a little deeper with you on the gut immune connection, because it's something that a lot of my patients, obviously listening to this, a lot of them have autoimmunity, and it's that sort of immune side of things is something that's quite interesting to them. It's also something I talk about a lot in clinic. You know, at least 70% of the immune cells, they're in the gut, the immune system is in the gut. How do you talk about that? How do you explain the sort of that gut immune connection specifically to people in a way that it really lands and hits home? Because quite often I think people don't realize how much the gut does outside of digestion.
Yeah, well, I will often say that the gut is like your body's frontline security system, the control center. So if the body is the airplane, the pilot himself is the brain, and the cockpit where all the different buttons are, that is the gut. Every day, your gut is deciding what gets let in, nutrients, water, beneficial compounds, and also what gets kept out. So, you know, pathogens, toxins, things that could trigger inflammation. And because so much of our immune tissue sits in our gut lining, if that barrier is irritated or compromised, then, you know, the immune system stays on high alert. So that can mean more inflammation, more sensitivity, feeling unwell. And it can be in ways that people don't immediately connect back to digestion or their gut. But we've got about 70% of our total immune cells located in our intestinal wall. So much of that is in our GALT, so our gut-associated lymphoid tissue in the gut wall. And as part of that mucosal immune system, it protects against any pathogens that we've ingested. So really, the gut and the immune system are so closely tied together. We can't separate them.
Yeah. And if we dig into that sort of how that looks day to day for people. So if people are sort of listening to this saying, great, okay, so I now understand that the immune, you know, a lot of the immune system is in my gut. If that gut immune axis has got a dysfunction, how might they actually be experiencing that sort of day to day? What could they be looking for, like signs in themselves?
It could look different, you know, just depending on person to person. But for one person, it might be bloating, food reactivity, frequent infections. For someone else, it could be fatigue, brain fog, skin flare-ups, poor resilience to stress, feeling like they never really fully recover, like infections go on and on. And it's sometimes not like a dramatic symptom. It can be just a pattern of things that feel a bit disconnected in the body until you look at the gut as part of that bigger picture and address gut health.
Yeah. I think one of the really important things for people to realize is the sort of wide variety of symptoms that can come up when things are related to the gut. I know people who are celiac who, you know, which is an autoimmune gut disorder, and they have no gut symptoms at all. They just get really bad brain fog, really bad fatigue. And, you know, I think just having that understanding that actually not every gut-related symptom is gut-related, you know, is not necessarily an upset stomach. I think it's really important for people to be aware of that and understand that actually, you know, that's part of the picture.
I completely agree. There's not one client comes into my clinic where we don't look at their gut health, and they're surprised often. They don't think they're coming to me for gut issues or bloating or digestive concerns, but I'm like straight in there. Let's look at your gut health. Let's talk about your gut. How could it be connected to what you're experiencing?
Yeah, it's really important. And there's a group of people, you know, obviously I work with autoimmune diseases, so we get a lot of those people coming through my clinic listening to this podcast who have gotten autoimmune diagnoses. And their specialist, their doctor is maybe, you know, managing some things on that sort of immune side or, you know, treating whatever the condition is. But quite often I find certainly when they come into clinic, like they've really not looked at the gut at all. It's one of those pictures that has just, they've just looked at the actual diagnosis, or they've just looked at the immune system, but they haven't looked at, well, they haven't looked at many other parts of the body, but the gut being one of those. How common is that sort of pattern? You know, how common do you see that in your clinic, sort of where people are coming in and they've maybe been treated for something by the doctors, but that sort of gut picture has kind of been missed? And what's the consequence of that sort of gap?
Unfortunately, I would say this is very common. I see this all the time. You know, very often the medical focus is understandably on controlling the autoimmune condition itself, but often the gut can be a really important piece of that wider puzzle, that wider picture. And it doesn't mean that the gut caused the condition, but it can influence the inflammatory load, the nutrient status, the symptom severity, all these different things, the quality of life. And if no one's looking at your digestion, your absorption of nutrients, your microbiome diversity, your eating patterns, there's often this missed opportunity to support how that person feels day to day.
I see. It's something I see a lot in clinic as well. You know, and like you said, it's, you know, they're doing everything. They think they're doing everything, and the doctors are doing everything they can do. And I think the patient thinks they're doing everything that they can do, and these other areas get forgotten. One of the other big areas, and it's something as well that we have been talking about recently on the podcast and on socials, is another area that really gets forgotten, I think, is that sort of what chronic stress does. We've been talking about it in the sense of what chronic stress does if you've got autoimmune disease or if you've got immune dysfunction, but also, you know, in the context of talking about this gut immune connection, chronic stress also has that impact on the gut, right, as well. So can you kind of just run us through how that stress impacts the gut and what that sort of can do to the body?
Yeah, it's huge. It really is huge. You know, when stress becomes chronic, our blood flow is often diverted away from the gut, away from digestion, because digestion isn't immediately necessary for our survival. So our body is going to prioritize survival over gut repair and digestion. And that can reduce our stomach acid, that can slow our digestive enzyme output, that can alter our gut motility, can affect the microbiome itself, stress. It can increase our intestinal permeability, or what's often referred to as leaky gut in some people. And that means your gut barrier becomes less selective. So, you know, it can allow toxins into your bloodstream and around your body. So yeah, stress can genuinely change how well you digest, absorb, tolerate food and really, really damage your gut health. And I know this through my clients, through obviously my knowledge as a nutritionist, but also my own personal experience. Whenever my Crohn's has flared up throughout my whole childhood, teenage years, adult life, it's always been so clearly correlated to a period of intense stress.
Yeah, I think it's the same for me. A flare up for me is always, even if stress is not the full picture, stress is usually part of it. So it's usually either stress completely, you know, if I've got overly stressed, I'll get a flare up. Or if I've picked up a virus, for example, then sometimes I get a flare up. But quite often I've picked the virus up because I've been under stress and burnt the candle at both ends, got a bit overtired, you know, so it's that stress and then that's impacted the immune system and then there's that flare up and then the gut becomes impacted as well. So it's very, I think stress is a really important, it's one I'm really sort of passionate about talking about because I think it's one of those things that really does cause triggers and flare ups with autoimmunity and like you said, you know, impacts the gut as well. So we sort of looked at that sort of gut immune sort of connection, but I'd like to have a look at like some of the things that sort of a little bit, I guess, of like, you know, some myth busting because there's so much information out there these days and you know, people can kind of get information from anywhere, but a lot of the time they're either getting wrong information or there's sort of things that have got a little bit misconstrued maybe. So I wanted to kind of just run through a few of these with you. First off, what is the most common thing you think people are told about their gut health that you think is either wrong or just sort of incomplete and not sort of the full picture?
I would say that bloating is normal, that everyone, you know, has to just accept being bloated all the time, especially if it happens every day. And of course, a little fullness after a meal can be normal. Mild bloating, if you have a very large meal, larger than usual, and you're aware of that. But regular bloating daily that's affecting your comfort, your confidence, your energy, that is really worth understanding and addressing rather than just normalizing and say, oh, you know, of course I get bloated, particularly for women. Women often will just blame it on their hormones. And yes, it can be related to your hormones. That can definitely exacerbate it. But there's plenty that we can do to stop that happening on such a regular basis.
Yeah, I love that. It's a great answer. It's one you see a lot. So the diagnosis of IBS, this is another one I wanted to just talk through with you. I see so many people who have been given, you know, a diagnosis. I don't even like to really call it a diagnosis because it's a vague sort of term. It's a syndrome, you know, it sort of indicates what's going on. But so many of them have been given IBS is what you've got, told sort of, you know, to kind of manage it. What's your view on IBS as that clinical label? And do you think it's missing anything? Do you think it kind of misses part of the picture?
Well, IBS it's an umbrella label. It's a kind of diagnosis by exclusion. You know, they might even do various tests and rule out inflammatory bowel disease, IBD, so Crohn's, colitis. They might rule out celiac, but you've still got these gut issues. So there you go. You've got IBS. Good luck. Go and live the rest of your life is what a lot of people are told, genuinely.
Yeah.
And, you know, what really matters is asking, why are those symptoms happening? Is it to do with stress? What's the root cause? Is it poor motility? Is it food triggers? Is it an imbalance in your gut microbiome? Are you maybe under eating or over restricting? Is it to do with pelvic floor dysfunction or hormone changes? The label of IBS shouldn't be the end of the conversation. It should be the beginning. It should be, it's not X, Y, and Z. It's not Crohn's, colitis, celiac. Let's get to the bottom of why this is happening and help you address it.
Yeah. And I think that's so important because we always sort of say with nutritional therapy and functional medicine, we always say that's what we're asking is why with anything. We're not asking what is going on. We're asking why is something going on. And I think that sort of distinguishing feature is really important, particularly in cases where there are syndromes. I work a lot with chronic fatigue syndrome. And again, that's like, again, it's a bit of a, exactly as you said, it's one of those slightly sort of umbrella terms. It's a little bit of, we've not been able to diagnose anything else. So we'll diagnose it as chronic fatigue if you're really tired all the time. And it is a bit of a similar sort of diagnosis. And it misses that question of, you know, why? And I think that is really important for lots of people. So many people put so much on getting a name for something. You know, I want a diagnosis. I want a name. I want to know what I've got. And yes, that can be really useful because obviously if you need treatment, that helps you get the right treatment. So I'm not saying you shouldn't get a diagnosis, but I think people kind of think that's the be all and end all. And just getting that label is that's it. That's the end. And now you can just be given the treatment and you're done. And I think really kind of differentiating between, okay, so now I've got a label, but actually why have I got this label?
100%.
It gives you that ability to then be able to dig into the next level of care and healing and be able to do this sort of work. Okay, so the big one that I wanted to ask about in this little like myth-busting bit, probiotics, because, you know, we can't really talk about gut health and not talk about probiotics because everyone talks about them. Everybody's taking them pretty much. You know, most people that come into clinic, I think, have taken a probiotic or are taking a probiotic at some point in their life. So what's your actual opinion on probiotics? When do you think they help? And a lot of times people come in and they'll sort of say to me, you know, am I wasting my money taking this, or is it actually doing me any good? So what's your initial thoughts on probiotics?
I think probiotics can absolutely help, but they're strain specific and the context really matters. So the more important question is, why are you taking it? So if you are on antibiotics or you've recently done a course of antibiotics, for example, maybe you've got antibiotic associated diarrhea, maybe you're taking it for your immune system or your vaginal microbiome. It can be really helpful in that perspective because we do have other microbiomes outside of our gut microbiome. But just taking a generic probiotic isn't automatically useful, especially if your diet is pretty good. You know, if you're having a lot of different diversity and fiber and fermented foods, so things like sauerkraut, kefir, kimchi, live yogurt, you can get in these kind of probiotic foods through your diet. But I do think that probiotics can be helpful in certain cases. I think it's really important to look at the whole picture. So as well as getting in those fermented foods for your gut health, are you feeding the good bacteria with prebiotic foods with plenty of fiber? Things like leeks, onions, garlic, cooked and cooled potato for resistant starch, bananas that are slightly underripe on the greener side for your prebiotics, whole grains, lentils, oats, that kind of thing. These are food for the gut bugs to help them colonize and multiply and thrive in your gut microbiome rather than just kind of passing through you. So thinking about all of these different things and then also thinking about lifestyle as well. Are you sleeping well? Are you really stressed? Are you getting in enough exercise, but also not overdoing it? Addressing all the different pieces of the puzzle before adding in a probiotic is the priority, I would say.
I agree with you. And then looking at the particular strain.
Yeah.
Particularly with like the autoimmune sort of picture, you know, there's certain strains that have been pulled up for things like Crohn's and colitis and things like that, where we know that those strains of probiotics actually work really well in an ulcerated colitis, for example, or like you said, post-antibiotic with certain ones. Or if you're traveling, you know, I have a lot of people that, you know, travel with work, and they often find that they get the upset stomachs and, you know, things like that when they've traveled and things like that. And there's certain strains that can be good for helping with that sort of traveling associated sort of, you know, diarrheas and things like that. So I think being really strain specific is really good. And I think also the quality as well of the probiotic. You know, I think sometimes some of the things that there are some good ones out there that you can get that have got billions in them, and, you know, they are good. But I think a lot of the time with any supplement, really, not just probiotics, you can be buying things that really don't have quite enough strength in, or maybe not quite the right strains, and then you can be wasting your money, which I think is most people's probably big worry is that they're wasting money rather than what it's doing for their health. I think more people are concerned about, you know, am I wasting money on these things?
Yeah, for sure. I would say if you're uncertain, just seek advice from someone qualified. Speak to a registered nutritionist or nutritional therapist or someone who knows what they're talking about and can help to advise you and tailor your supplement regime to you personally, rather than just walking into Boots or Holland & Barrett and picking up the first probiotic off the shelf.
I think that's the biggest mistake with probiotics, definitely. Certainly the biggest one I see is sort of people come in and they have just sort of picked up something and think that hopefully that's doing everything. And I think it's being really targeted. Which is what we do day to day in clinic anyway. It is about really targeted plans. You touched on prebiotics there as well. Let's just kind of dig into those a little bit more if we can. I think sometimes people are not quite clear on what the difference is between probiotics and prebiotics. Prebiotics is something that I do sometimes use in clinic. So can you just sort of explain people the difference between sort of probiotic, prebiotic?
Yeah.
So they know, which one they should be taking, if they should be taking them, and from getting them from foods as well, sort of what they do for your body, for the gut.
Sure. So they're very different things. I know they're only one letter apart when you spell it, but they sound similar. But probiotics are the good bacteria themselves that you're putting into your microbiome, your gut microbiome. We can get them through fermented food. We can get them through supplements as well. Prebiotics are the food or the fuel that those good bacteria feed off that helps them to thrive inside our gut. So we really need both. And you can get both in supplement form, but I would recommend going for food first. With both of these, you know, often a probiotic will be only one single strain. Same with a prebiotic, it might be one specific type of prebiotic, which occasionally can be helpful. But generally, going for prebiotic-rich foods, like the ones I've listed, onions and garlic and leeks and underripe bananas and whole grains, this is going to give you such a nice broad spectrum of different types of fiber, different types of nutrients, you know, varied types of prebiotics. So you want to get them both in, and ideally you want to go food first.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I think that's another reason as well why, you know, sometimes looking at the gut and doing the gut testing and things like that can be really important too, because if we're telling people to eat all these foods, we want to make sure that they are actually absorbing well and that they're getting the nutrients from those foods when they eat them and, you know, and things like that. So again, it's another reason why really looking at your gut health is really important.
Definitely.
Final one of these things that are being missed or myths that are out there. If someone has been told, and this is something I see so much with lots of different things, but if somebody has been told that their gut is fine, i.e. they've had, you know, a normal endoscopy, they've not really got a diagnosis, but they're still feeling terrible, maybe they've got gut symptoms, or maybe they've just got fatigues and the brain fogs, the things we've talked about, what would you say to those people who really have kind of almost come to the end of the line in terms of that type of testing that they can get through the sort of conventional medicine? What would you sort of say to them as, you know, next steps and what they should be looking at?
I see this a lot as well. I would say normal tests are reassuring to an extent, but there's more we can do. There's more we can look at. We can absolutely kind of uncover, get to the bottom of what's really going on. So the tests that you're going to get on the NHS are not always going to explain the function. You can still have issues with motility, stress-related digestive disruption, microbiome imbalances. You can have poor meal patterns or nutrient insufficiencies that don't show up on standard investigations. So it's worth digging deeper. I would recommend working closely with a nutritionist who can guide you on the right path. I wouldn't recommend ordering the first gut health kit that you see online. I would definitely seek advice from a qualified professional who can really help to advise you and guide you on that journey.
Yeah, I think just not giving up as well, right? I think it's so important that people know that there's other options, like all the ones you've just said. You know, that those options are out there and that there are things that you can do even when you think you've come to the end of the road.
100%. I couldn't agree more.
Okay. So let's get a little bit practical for people that are listening. So let's, you've already spoken about the importance of like food first. Let's sort of dig into that food a little bit more. I think the biggest thing with nutrition advice that I get, you know, the biggest sort of problem that people have with it is maybe conflicting advice or just confusion, because there's so much information out there these days that they kind of almost don't know where to start. So is there sort of a first one or few principles that you would sort of say cuts through all that noise that's out there, that if somebody just really wants to try and start doing something, start working on their gut health, what would those sort of things be for you?
Gosh, there really is so much confusion and conflicting articles in the newspaper and on Instagram. Every day I see something else. So I like to start with addition rather than restriction. So what can we add in rather than, you know, removing different food groups from our diet? Can we build more consistency? Can we incorporate more protein with every meal and every snack? Can we add in more color, more fiber diversity throughout the day, more regular meals? You know, I don't love people skipping meals. I think eating regularly is really, really important. Often people are looking for this kind of perfect food or perfect meal plan, but they really just need a calmer, more consistent foundation. So addressing the foundations, and that goes beyond diet as well. All the healthy lifestyle things that we know we should be doing, but we kind of let them slip. So getting a good night's sleep, incorporating some me time or whatever it is that makes you feel calm and helps you tackle stress. That might be meditation and breath work, or it might be reading a book in bed or having an Epsom salt bath or going for a walk in nature or journaling or all of the above. And maybe you want to have a play around and work out how your personal stress management toolkit looks and works for you.
Yeah, I think that's very true. I'm a big believer in addition first as well. I think really important to, I think as well, because there is so much information out there, most people by the time they get to coming to see us have probably tried some form of diets. You know, they've quite a lot of them these days. You know, people have sort of come in and they've tried like AIP or keto, or, you know, there's lots of different things out there that they've almost tried so many that quite often I think people are on more restriction than they are on eating too much. I always like to try and start as well, exactly like you said, with, you know, what can we actually add in that's going to nourish you? What is missing? What's not there in your diet? And I think that's a really great place to start. I think people as well, keeping just a simple food diary.
Mm.
We are creatures of routine and habit. And I think it's very easy to sort of think, oh, I'm eating really, really well. And actually, as we start going through the diet, and all of a sudden it will kind of become clear that actually, well, you're having the same thing for breakfast every day. You're really having maybe two, three types of meals at night, but the veg is kind of all the same veg every, you know, it's like, so I think
yeah.
There's a lot of those things that we are creatures of habit, and we get stuck in our ways. We go into the supermarket and we just grab the things that we know, oh, I'll do that with that, because we know that that's just easy to put together. So I think keeping a food diary as well is quite a good one, because I think people can just, it just makes you kind of log things and look at things and see patterns and realize actually that maybe where there are places that you can improve and start adding more in and things like that.
Yeah, for sure. I think a food diary is actually a really underrated tool. And speaking of that diversity, you know, next time you're in the supermarket, it doesn't need to be a drastic change. You don't need to go and pick up the most exotic fruit that you don't even know how to pronounce. But if you normally buy a brown onion or white onion, get a red onion. It's got more polyphenols in there. If you always have raspberries, get blueberries or strawberries. If you always get red peppers, get green peppers or yellow peppers. You know, it doesn't need to be a crazy swap. If you want to try a new vegetable or new fruit or a new type of nut, say you normally get almonds to sprinkle on your porridge, get some walnuts or pistachios or a bag of mixed nuts, you know, switch it up.
Yeah, I think that's, I really think that's so important. And those simple little things as well that just don't take too much time for people, but really do make a big difference, I think are really important. So what are the signs, you know, if people start doing this sort of work, what can they expect to start see improving? What signs should they be looking for to see if they're kind of, you know, what they're doing is making a difference?
So often the signs are quite subtle at first, but you'll see things like better energy in the morning when you wake up, fewer cravings throughout the day and less bloating by the evening. More regular bowel habits is obviously a key one. Better sleep, feeling just kind of less reactive after meals, not experiencing gut symptoms, or maybe not having that kind of afternoon slump after a meal because you're digesting your food better. These are some things you can look out for. It's not always dramatic, but it's often those small, steady shifts.
Yeah, I think there's a really great way of looking at it. You know, you and I both work with people who are doing a lot of the right things and probably are, you know, really trying to make a change, and they're still not feeling better. So this is sort of looking at the other part. What can they, you know, if things are working, what can they be looking for that is, you know, is signs that things are going well? But then on the other side of things, you know, a lot of people are doing a lot of the right things and maybe not feeling better. What do you usually see as kind of a piece of that puzzle that is missing? Because, you know, we talk about the interconnections around the body and things like that, and sort of it is a bit like a puzzle piece. We have to pull things together and try and find out what these missing bits are. So what do you usually see as kind of some of those things that are missing in the picture if people are really not improving, but they feel like they're doing all the right things?
Usually it's either nervous system regulation or just general consistency. People aren't being consistent. So a lot of people are eating well, but they're rushing their meals. They're not eating mindfully. They're under chronic stress and pressure all the time. They're sleeping badly. They're constantly changing what they're doing before anything has time to work. They try supplements for 5 days and they don't see a change. So they swap to a different probiotic or a different this or that. So consistency is really, really important. And looking after your nervous system, I mean, that is such a game changer.
A lot of people know they have to do the food thing. So they will quite happily change diet and they'll happily like sort of take some supplements because that feels quite easy and not time consuming. But I think all those things that you've like mentioned there, like the, you know, the sleep, the stress and movement, you know, all of that sort of thing, that lifestyle picture, which is a little bit harder to implement sometimes because, you know, it's more time consuming and things like that. I think a lot of the time people don't realize how much of an emphasis and how much good those things can actually do for you. And just getting some of those foundations, like just, you know, an extra hour of sleep a night, you know, just any of those little things, like if you can regulate your sleep so you're not waking up in the middle of the night, you know, things like that just have such a profound effect. But they, you know, even though they feel like quite sort of simple things.
Yeah, definitely. I think it's so important to take that 360 degree approach as well. So our sleep, our stress, our hydration, our movement, the relationships in our lives. It's not just what's on our plate.
Yeah, I love that. I love having this conversation with you. I mean, there's so much that we could talk about. But just to kind of close things out for people, what's the conversation that you most want to be having right now? So what's the thing that you really feel in the gut health world is not being spoken about enough, or not being said loudly enough, or people are just not, that message is not getting through to people? What would you like to sort of leave people with?
I would say it's that health is not about restriction. It's the opposite. It's about abundance. It's about diversity. It's about adding in, like we said, more color, more diversity, more fiber, more consistency, more regular meals, not cutting, stripping it back, skipping meals or anything like that. I think a lot of people are trying very hard to be healthy, and they think that they're eating very clean or perfectly or whatever they call it, but they're actually creating more stress around food and around supplements and around their routine and kind of a borderline obsession. So really the healthiest approach is often more balanced, obviously personalized and more sustainable than people expect.
Yeah, I love that. I think that's a really great message to leave people with. If people want to find out more, where can they find you, listen to you? We mentioned your podcast, but where can people find you, listen to you, work with you?
You can find me on Instagram at Ellie Breacher Nutrition. My website is elliebreacher.co.uk. My podcast is the Gut 360 Podcast. Drop me a message and I am always happy to have a chat.
Brilliant. We'll link all those in the show notes below this episode as well so that people can find those easily. So final question, just to kind of finish off, what do you know now about your own health that you wish you'd known 10, 15 years ago?
That the gut is the key to everything, right? And I mean everything in the body. You know, I think we sometimes just try to deal with symptoms on their own. So in the past, say I've had a skin flare up and I've tried to treat it with a topical cream or a this flare up or a that flare up. And ultimately it all roots back to the gut. So the gut really is at the forefront of every system of our body. And we have a right and a duty to nourish it, to nurture it, to look after it. And in turn, it will love us back. It will look after us if we look after our gut. That's what I tell my clients and myself.
I love that. I think that's a really great message to leave for everybody. So thank you so much for joining me today. It's been great to have this conversation with you. And we'll link everything below this episode so people can find you.
Thank you so much for having me.
You've been listening to The Good Health Podcast. I'm Nicole Good, certified functional medicine practitioner and author of Optimal You. Find me at goodhealth.uk, that's GOODE, on Instagram at Good Health Clinic, and wherever you get your podcasts. Show notes and all resources are linked below. See you next week.